The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome to Hearth Tales on Fresh FM. Join me, Rich McCoy, as we gather closer to hear the tales of seasoned artists, makers, creative souls, and those who love to support them. Listen to stories of their journeys, how they wrestle with their demons, and how they balance their calling with the scaffolding of admin, life, and self-promotion.
This episode, we talk to Ian Kenneth Brown. It forms part of about a two-hour conversation that we had over at his place, which covers lots of different subjects. It covers his background as a storyteller, as a writer. We talk about his background as a career and a laughter yoga teacher and student, and some conversations about plant medicine and such. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take some of those subjects and make probably the next 3 to 4 shows out of that. I may change my mind during the course of the conversations, but just bear with it. And there's a fair amount of background noise, but it's bird song and such, so I'm going to leave that in because it seems to speak to the integrity of the conversation. Ian, I know you as a poet and a storyteller and a clown and a plethora of wonderful things. Would you care to, for people who don't know you and your work, would you care to introduce yourself and the work you do?
Yeah, I'd like to do that. I think I get to me via just a piece of poetry.
Yeah, cool.
That poetry to begin. So I've got a piece. And this is a poem that it's called The Prayer. And so I bless this space between us. You know, like the John Donahue kind of, to bless this space in between. The prayer. I want to pray with you. I want to sit on the earth in silence. I want to say nothing to you. I want our stillness to have the power of plate tectonics. Slowly we will collide. And we will drive into one another. I want your every breath to be self-aware. I want to know you in your blackness. I want to know the emptiness in your mind. I want the steady silence to creep around us like a night cloud. A silver slither of moon. Sharp edges of the clouds. I want to know the beating of your heart in the rhythm of this ritual. I want our eyes to momentarily meet before free falling from here. I want to understand essence. I want to understand essential. I want to understand infinite. I want to understand illusion. I want to enter into this stillness with you. I want to understand the fibers of this fabric with the certainty of my being. I want to close my eyes and have vision. I want to celebrate stillness. I want to know that there is no secret and there is no meaning. And there is no now. I want the space between us to be the only space. The space between two worlds. As the event gathers together, the anticipation, the stillness, the energy will vibrate so deeply. The growl of thunder's belly, the tremble of bass, the waiting will be driven on the great sigh of together. Soon we will sit together on the earth and we will find the words from within us for the prayer. It is a grave and certain prayer, like black footsteps in the night. It is a sure and well-worn prayer, like the pathway that those footsteps fall upon. Let this prayer rise up to the silver-lined clouds. Let the prayer's gentle illumination be our only light. We will sit together on the earth soon. The prayer has been spoken.
Wonderful. And that's a piece that you've written yourself.
Yeah. That's something that arrived in Pisac, in a little town in Peru. And followed a night voyage, a journey into soul, a journey into some sense of sort of scrabbling, a searching, a looking, which is something of me, of an introduction to me, and some piece of my curiosity, my innate child has seemed to stay with me. It seemed to carry me from a place in St. Asaph on the North Wales coast, Cymraeg. And my mum and my dad, you know, they in industrial 1960s, 1970s Britain, and they found a little place in the suburb, or I don't know what to call it, the suburb. There's definitely some rough corners. And I grew up in that kind of a rough environment. And this piece of like an essence, if you like, what I'd come to talk about as inspiration in something we could probably hold a podcast.
Of inspiration.
Inspiration, which is something that's definitely there for me. This roughness on the outside, I think, helped to create some kind of shield, some kind of protection, some kind of inner peace into the body to hold this golden thing, the seed, that it took time to gestate and it took time to grow. And the physical body was growing and the mind was growing, but also this deeper seed, which I started to attend to. And that's, you know, I suppose by introduction to self, there's a process of, you know, some 50 years of maturation. And I sort of, my introduction there would be to say that I'm a family man. I'm ensconced, I'm stoked, and I'm loved, based and held on land and with family. And so that it doesn't, maybe it does, and maybe there's definition in it. But there's definitely something about like awakening and coming into something new. So, yeah, there's a piece. There's just a little piece of where I'm coming from, and I hope it's a bit vague, because I think it's fitting for myself to be categorized.
Yeah.
Particularly by me. So, yeah, I'm 55 years old. I'm kind of 6 foot tall. I've got some I've got some tools there that can kind of help me.
And have you always had that kind of creative soul, like from a kid? You've always done and made and explored?
I think we can look back. I think many of us could look back and say, oh, yeah, I had this kind of leaning towards something. But it didn't seem to be creative. It seemed to be in a dance with the infinite. There was this core piece for myself that I can remember being in a sandpit when I was 5 years old, and there's a beautiful red brick wall around the sandpit. This is when like playgrounds weren't made out of rubber, right? No plastic. This red brick sandpit. This big sandpit, and I was sitting in the sandpit, and I was having dialogue with myself, and the dialogue said, "You're eternal." And in that, there's this piece that. It was that great spirit, or was that me? Was that me, or was that great? And there was this dance in between, and I kind of accepted that.
Yeah.
It seemed to be more significant than me working on the sandcastle that I was working on. You know, I could say it was about the creative process, and it is.
Yeah.
But there's this other piece that felt like it was being informed by my relationship to spirit.
Are all the creative things that you work with, they're informed by that inner journey, that thinking, that kind of wanting to understand the infinite and...
Yeah, I'd like to take that with me. I'd like to curate the question, because this is a piece that, like, the question has brought me, it brings me closer, like, now into the moment where I'm like, oh, maybe that is the thing.
Mm.
And there's a curiosity. Mm. I just want to kind of, like, come back to that piece. Mm-hmm. And the curiosity has a different texture from doubt.
Mm.
So let's use doubt and curiosity as kind of something. Whereas the weight of those two kind of pieces, doubt will often is a way of comprehension, and doubt will be heavy. It's by gravity.
Mm.
It's drawing me into a spiral of, I'm not sure. I'm not on safe ground. I don't know. And then there's this curiosity, which by its weight and by the way that we hold it inside, it's calling me to something else. It's calling me to this, like, the birds in the nest. It's calling me to the song and the breeze, because it's alive. And I'm curious about that crux of life and death. And only when I reached a certain place in my own evolution did I felt strong enough to tentatively put my feet out, you know, onto the thin ice. You know, maybe to quote Pink Floyd here, you know, if you should go skating on the thin ice of modern life, don't be surprised when a crack in the ice appears under your feet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this piece for me where I realized I've got to go out there. I've got to go out into the world, and I've got to take the gifts or the energies that I'm carrying, and I'm going to test the ice as I'm going out there, because I've got to find out if it's going to hold me. Is it going to hold the cargo? And there was a definite, like, rite of passage.
Mm.
There was a definite crossroads. There was something that defined me, something that broke me.
Mm.
And something had to be about life and death.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't come as a single piece.
Yeah. So, I mean, what I'm reading from that is that the things you do are the path to that understanding.
I think sometimes they could be the snakeskin that I leave behind, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so it shows that I've done my due diligence and I've processed the piece. So some of it is raw and in the moment, and it's a yearning for a future. And some of the work that I create is a gratitude into the past that I've come from.
Mm.
So let's flip for a second from poetry into story, because a good story, right, for me, is one that I've got the lines in my face. I've got the chops, right? I've got the chops to drop that, and it's live and it's real. And it's palpable around the fire. The energy is, you can't forge that, right? And I love the idea of forging here, right? Because we've got fakery and forgery, but we've got the real deal in the forge, right? It's where it gets burned up. And then there's this fire in the center, you know? So there's this attention to the magic of the piece. There's an attention to the magic of the piece that we let it be as a conduit with experience, as a vessel that carries the necessary cracks of authenticity, right? So grab that thing and say, that's the thing I'll wrestle with. How can I stand in front of an assembly, or how can I stand or sit on the bones of my ass around a wet fire and say, I've got something that wants to come through. It's a little bird in a nest that wants to sing for the first time. So I'm going to let it, and I'm going to ask first. And this is something, like, with maturity, that there's a piece, you know, for my children that I want to reach out for a moment and recognize that my children don't have the capacity yet to ask for permission. Okay. And by having them in my presence, I realized I wasn't asking for permission in many situations. So I have some teachers with me, but also there's this kind of concerted experience that the nuance is, then I curate that experience and then I pass it back to them, and they get a chance to use it as a stepping stone to fully embodied, mature, healthy, responsible relationing as a healthy human being that looks outwards and says, I respect, I see your capacity to hold spiritual space, and I want to to acknowledge that before I begin. So I ask. It's a very beautiful kind of technology. Please, can I?
Yes.
Can I tell a story? Could I sing you a song? Can I? And those things, for me, I think they are part of culture.
Mm. And go on. You talked about your laying the path in some ways for your own children, but what was your journey into it? How did you become doing the storytelling and writing and stuff? What was from little Ian who to
what jumps into my more walkout right now is walking back from Sunday school when I was probably about six,
right?
And there was a young girl who's 14 or 15, was an elder, and she would walk back up the road with us to drop us off at our house. And she would tell stories to us.
Right.
And she would just invent them.
Great.
And me and my sister were like, you can do that? And we listened to these stories about, like, do you remember Smarties?
Yes.
She had pop guns that would fire Smarties. And she had, like, the baddies, like, they were called vampires. And then and you'd get your pop gun, Smarty gun, and you'd pop the... And then they'd live in a castle, and we'd be in the story. She'd say, oh, and there was this little boy called Ian, and... Oh, it's so enlivening to be offered a mythology or a story, however simple, that you get a chance to see yourself, to look with your own waking consciousness. I'm not talking about my eyes.
No.
I'm talking about some eye that is within that's creating visual images. And it creates a center. The world tree becomes somewhere else. And it's mystically kind of got up out of my bedroom, out of the middle of my house, and it's taken up roots in a different person. And the person was the storyteller.
Yeah.
And so she became my world tree in that. And I thank her today. And thank you for reminding me, you know, bringing me back together again.
Yeah.
And some fall on the dry land and some fall on the pathway and some pop up at the edge of the verge. And here's the verge again. The verge for me was this kind of place in between places, which story speaks to.
Definitely.
So this edge, this boundary, that one of the greatest parable teachers and one of the greatest storytellers was Jesus. And in that, there's this experience for me that later on in my life, because I'd received a whole heap of curious cautionary cynicism around a relationship with an amazing storyteller. It's like, right, still want to kind of kick that one out because it's a really good one, you know. I want to get to know some of how do you do parables? This is so clever technology. You tell a story about mustard seeds or about wine and skins, right? So can I just drop
the
skins and the wine, because this came up recently for me. Is there's the wine skin, right? And I brew honey mead. And I'd gone in and I'd looked and I'd seen that the mead was, it had some kind of like discoloration on the top.
Mm.
So I thought, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll go save it. So I pour it into a clean bucket, scrape off all of the bits on the top, the kind of fluffy moldy bit, and scrape that off. It's the same with cheese. It'd be fine. And then I kind of put it in like that and put the top on. And here you go. That night, I went back and I pick up a book, and it's like in the opening pages, there was a quote of, I'm trying to remember if it was Mark or something, and it's in a gospel, and it says something about the idea of, thou shalt not put the old wine into new skins.
Right.
Or the new wine into old skins, because it will spoil.
Right? Yeah.
So get this. I went and then did due diligence. I scratched my head. What's that about? It's talking about age. It's talking about the things of youth belong to the things of youth. The things of the elder belongs to the space of the elder. And the two shouldn't get mixed up. Because if I try and put elder work into the youth, it doesn't land well. Yeah. It spoils the experience. And if we try and put, and I sound like I'm preaching it, but I'm not, brother. I'm trying to just hold that space, which is this really speaks to my times.
Yeah.
Where the cult of youth has exploded into like, oh, we'll eternally live forever as children and we won't have the responsibilities. Ah, that's an interesting paradigm that is being played out. And then there's, so too, there'll be a return swing when we look at how life balances itself out, and we'll find that the elders will say, well, these are the things of the elders. And there will be, those are elder stuff. And there'll be this interesting piece that, can we bridge the spaces through our, from our innate elder's child? And there's humor in this, right? There's humor in it. So I got that. I think that's landing for me. And I know that I'm at the moment, I'm not a big enough container to hold all those ramifications. But I'm grateful for this lady, the storyteller, who threw seeds out. And I just pecked one. And I swallowed it down whole, and I became impregnated with a burning.
We talked briefly there about humour. And the first time I met you, you introduced yourself as Laughing Dog. Where does that name come from? And, and what does a dog mean to you?
Thank you. So, Verity, she's a lady in North Ireland, and she was part of a druid grove. And I was chatting to her on her mum's sofa. And the wolf shed, this beautiful space that they hold out there called the Grove of the Summer Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's related to a druid group called Obod, which is the Order of Bardo Vasin Druids. Oof. I'd just come from Coromandel, and I'd sat with Shining Crystal and her husband. Was it Standing Bear? I think it was Standing Bear. So they trained in the Lakota tradition of holding a nipi. And I was just like, wow, I'll try that.
Mm.
And my sister, who's, you know, a dear friend, sister, you know, that kind, she said, hey, let's go to the city. Now we had to grab our togs and our towel, barefoot. We ran across this field where they were kind of already gone into the lodge. Hey, sorry, we're late. It's okay. You know, you can come in. And the nipi opens. And we reverently come into the space, and I put my head on the ground, and there's that. That's it. That's that piece. And as I go over the threshold, Standing Bear says, "Ah, Talking Bear." And I said, and I sat down, and I just started to laugh. And I laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. And the lady who'd come in, she'd heard him also refer to me as Talking Bear. And he just knew me.
Yeah.
He'd sat in a space with me before. It was our karmic kind of dance through lives for him to initiate me once again into an old healthy way of looking after the body. It was no fuss. He was not trying to do woo-woo for me. It's just get in there, sweat, your body will feel good, get yourself back. Jump in the cold stream and So he did that piece, you know. And as I left, I said, oh, I've got this talking, I've got a name. I recognize that. And I thought, this is wonderful. I always wanted a nickname. You know, when I was 6, 7 years old, there was Bazza, there was Gazza, there was Staz, there was, you know, the dude that was like, had a really funky name that was called Ashy or something like that. And they're really derivatives of family names. But then every now and then you'd get someone who was called like the Wings. Or like, you know, Kiddo. And you kind of go like, how did they get such a cool nickname? I wanted a nickname. And I looked.
Yeah.
And when I looked, I chased the experience away. And at some point, age and entropy.
Yeah.
Slowed down. And then I gave in. And when I gave in, it came in. I received. So I go back to the grove on the sofa, and I'm still sat with Verity, and I'm just saying to Verity, hey, I just came from the sweat lodge, and they gave me a name. They called me Talking Bear. I said, I don't want to tell many people about this because it's like, I may scare it away again, and it's just arrived, and it means something to me. And she said, that's weird. You're not a talking bear. You're a laughing dog. And I said, that's really interesting because that hat fits too.
Yeah.
And when I took that, I realized that there's some sense of necessity to hold duality as a holder of a space inside that is plural. And in that, these two pieces feel much more comfortable in being held in a balance of, say, summer and winter, of light and dark, of you know, justice and injustice, all of these dualities. And I said, oh, I am that. So I'm going to take both names.
Nice.
And with one of them, I danced into the light and said, hey, everybody, I'm Laughing Dog. Hey, everybody, I'm Laughing Dog. Hey, everybody, I'm Laughing Dog. So there's Talking Bear.
Yeah.
Right. So Laughing Dog is about my Celtic relationship with the zoomorphic carvings of the Pict, who forged this deep bond with a particular animal on our planet. And for me, from a karmic perspective, or from a life cycle perspective, of we've all emerged from the earth, and we've gone through layer after layer after layer of our intelligence, reaching a point where we could possibly transform into the human experience. One of the last places that you would find before you stepped into the human body was a dog. And the absolute bond that's, wow, I still, every time I pat a dog, I'm like, you really made the effort to step out of your wolf costume. And thank you for showing us that an evolutionary process can happen. And in that, I'm like crazy passionate about dogs. So I got my body tattooed with them. I started to collect stories about dogs. And that happened in my youth. And it's continuing to happen today when another dog story, you know, tell me this other dog story. And often we find that in dog stories, you've got this humorous piece. The dogs don't always... shall I tell you a story about a dog?
If you feel that would be good, yes.
Yeah, I do. So this is once upon a time, a long, long time ago, there's this piece, and it's from the islands. I'm just going to say it's from the islands because I don't know its correct genealogy. And as a curator of story, it's healthy to know the genealogy, but not always something that is of too much information.
Yep.
We're good.
To hear that story and hear the rest of this interview, you'll have to tune in next week. Or you could probably go to hearthtales.com and I'll upload the full video of this whole interview. Thank you for lending us your ears. You can find more interviews and how to request a Hearth Tale featuring your favourite New Zealand artist, maker or creative soul on our website, hearthtales.com. And you can listen to this episode of Hearth Tales on freshfm.co.nz with a new show every fortnight. Until next time, fare thee well, friends. Fare thee well.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.